Welcome to In Season, where we explore connections between people, land, plants, and wildlife here in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm Teresa Retzloff, and joining me in the studio today is Brenda Holmes-Stanchu. She is a local master gardener, but also so much more. She is a naturalist, a nature educator. She works some part-time with the Haystack Rock Awareness Program, the Willapa Bay Refuge, and she has many, many things that she is passionate about. But today we're talking about something that she's passionate about and I'm passionate about too, which is hummingbirds. Hummingbirds. I'm smiling just saying it. Brenda, welcome. It's so glad you're here.
Thank you for inviting me.
When it was suggested to me that I talk to you and that we talk about hummingbirds, part of me was like, I can't believe I've never done this before, because hummingbirds are such a wonderful bird that so many people are curious about. But here we are, and you're telling me that there's a lot of things that people think they know about hummingbirds, but they don't actually. So tell me, how did you get interested in them? Where did you first meet them as a bird?
Yeah, so I grew up in New Jersey, which I know there were hummingbirds there, but I never got to actually pay attention to them till I moved to Colorado. And when we were living in Colorado, I quickly began working at a nature center there. I became a lead naturalist. And as I was discovering what subjects I wanted to be able to focus on, as I was giving my talks, which I gave talks on everything that was living in Colorado, but the hummingbirds were such an easy discussion because people were so enamored with them. And they also put on quite a show at the nature center that we had. We had a veranda and it was open, and the birds were constantly flying in and out of our back area because they were very busy with their lives, and they were very dramatic. And so people were asking lots and lots of questions. So I got to enjoy watching the life cycle of those birds and answer the questions. So as I was doing research, though, on the birds for myself, because I was learning as I was teaching other people, the more I learned, the more bizarre these birds became to me. And there's just so many things about them that are unique in the bird world. And so they are extremely easy to talk about.
What brought you here to the North Coast? I mean, Colorado, mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people make that migration.
No pun intended.
But yes. But also, I mean, because are the hummingbirds different here too?
Yeah, so in Colorado, we only have hummingbirds that are visiting because our winters are not appropriate for them to be able to stay. And my whole family, we absolutely enjoyed our decades in Colorado. But we had come out, like so many people, during our school vacations to enjoy the Pacific Northwest, and absolutely fell in love with it. And of course, water. Where we were in high altitude, I had to drive quite a bit to be able to go kayaking. Moving out here, I'm just in heaven being around all of this moisture and all the waterways. And quite a shock to discover that, you know, the hummingbirds have figured out a way, at least one current species, to overwinter. Migration is a very tricky, dangerous thing, and animals do it often for food sources or to be able to find a better place to be able to breed. These hummingbirds that are figuring out how to stay, they are, you know, able to find food and make, this a year-round residence. But that's only been within like the last 15 years. And that specific species is the Anna's hummingbird.
So before that, they migrated as well.
Yeah, for the most part. And so, you know, reading through the research from what I've been able to find, and of course, you know, new things are discovered every single day. But from what I've read, the Anna's, they have benefited from a lot of our suburban landscapes. So as we keep adding bushes and plants and trees, that are flowering, they are able to take advantage of that. As we are adding to our yards, all of a sudden their food source was increasing. So one of the things that I like to point out very quickly to people is that, yes, these birds are drinking sugar water, which gives them and helps their incredibly fast metabolism. That metabolism, you know, is aiding their fast flight, their ability to move the way they do. If, like any animal, if they only eat sugar, they are not going to last very long.
And by sugar water, you're talking about
nectar.
But if they're only eating from a feeder.
Even nectar from bushes and flowers, that really is only going to have a 5-to-1 sugar ratio.
Oh, okay.
And so there is a little bit of minerals that are going to come up through the roots. But really, it's just, you know, it's a certain kind of sugar that they are getting. And we can replicate that in a feeder. But, you know, if you, of course, you know of insects that only enjoy nectar and have chosen to survive on that. And if they do, they live a very short time. So if you just pause for that brief moment and go, oh, okay, wait a minute here. Now we have this animal that obviously cannot just survive on sugar. So where is this fantastic flyer also finding its fats, minerals, all the proteins that it needs to have? So one of the other things that these birds are doing as they are doing that fantastic flying that they do is they are constantly going up to bushes and flowers in ways that you might look at it and say, there's not a flower right there for them to be drinking from. And it's because they are eating the insects. So if they did not eat insects, they would not be able to survive. And one of the ways they discovered that was when they were first capturing these gorgeous birds, you know, and wanting to keep them in aviaries of some sort, they were discovering that these birds weren't surviving. And so then they were really paying attention to them, and the birds do hawking. And that's where they're doing this, you know, kind of back and forth in the air. And, you know, that can be territorial, but most of the time it's because they are going after insects, a lot of small gnats. They will go up to spider webs and steal the what the spider captured. They will also eat the spider if it's small enough. So they're eating insects and arachnids.
It is a very fun conversation
to have with people. And I always give them a moment to just take that thought. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's right. They wouldn't be able to live otherwise.
I mean, and you're right. Of course not.
But you never had to think about it.
No. That is amazing.
It is.
So how many species do we have here in the Pacific Northwest and along the coast?
The annas is, you know, not all of the annas choose to stay year round, but again, they don't have to do the risk of migration. So we have the annas. So the male is going to have that bright headdress, that bright helmet. Those are iridescent feathers that, depending on the way the light is hitting them, they can look black, they can look dark green, they can look bright fuchsia. It just depends on the light hitting them. And then we have the females that are much more muted colors, still gorgeous, but they're not going to have those bright feathers because they are the ones that are going to be sitting on the nest. Then in the beginning of March, we get the rufous. And the rufous is a smaller bird, and it is headed from areas of Mexico, and it is going up the coast and going to, not always, but often as far as Alaska. So they have the longest migration of these hummingbirds, and they are a rufous brown on the back. They have a more orange neck. And their wings can, they have a gap. The top two feathers on the ends of their wings have a little gap, so it makes kind of a bumblebee sound. All hummingbirds can have a humming noise only because the speed of their wings, but these actually have a little gap, and it can, you know, sound like a large bumblebee. And they are headed, you know, through Oregon, going up the state. Many of them do stay and do nest in Oregon, but a large percent of them are going to continue up to Alaska. So that is a huge migration. Sadly, we've seen significant drop-offs in the roofer population. And some of that has to do with, you know, where can they do all these layovers as they are on their way up and on their way back down to Mexico. I would see them all the time in Colorado on their way back through. So July 4th was the time of year that we would get them. And people here and in Colorado, you always hear about the obnoxious brown hummingbird that comes in and starts chasing everybody away from the feeders. And, oh, he has no manners. And people like to personify with hummingbirds. So you hear about this, you know, naughty little bird. And you're like, well, actually, it's a bird that is smaller than the other birds. In, you know, for us in Colorado, it was a broadtail. Here, it's the Anna's. And if it's not kind of a little on the bossy side, it's not going to get anything to eat. So they're
and it's
extremely
been traveling
good.
A long time.
Yes, I feel like sorry for them.
It
rather
needs
than
a drink. It needs some refreshment.
Exactly. It
that
needs
is
that
a
fast.
Huge migration. It's crazy to think of those little tiny birds
can do it
coming off, going from Mexico to Alaska in a year and back again.
And
wow,
you know, so they. The female typically lays two eggs. Here, they can get away with having more than one nesting in a year because they are going to start early in the spring, which still, that blows my mind because that's unique, a little bit unique to this area compared to where I've lived. And, you know, that the males for migrating birds will leave first, then the females, and then the nestlings. And, you know, because we personify so much with these birds, you know, often people are like, you know, I have to make sure I'm catering to them and I'm taking care of them. It's up to me, you know, but, you know, these nestlings make their way from point A to point B, you know, for, you know, and down to Mexico, those that migrate without our help. So they certainly don't need us telling them when they need to leave. You know, there's different things where people say, if I don't take my feeders down at a certain time, they're going to stay. If I don't do this, you know, if they don't need a map to get to Mexico, they don't need us telling them when to go.
So the feeders are largely for us.
Correct.
That's like just a pleasure for people to be able to watch them and have them near their house. I do want to ask you about feeders.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I think there's like
it's
one
definitely,
of those.
Definitely something I like to chat about.
So tell us about feeders, because a lot of people have them and there are strong feelings about it.
Yes.
And there's beliefs about what you should and shouldn't do with feeders.
Absolutely.
So tell us about good hummingbird feeder etiquette.
So there's a few common mistakes. And, you know, sometimes when people make mistakes, it's no big deal. And other times it can actually be quite detrimental. So one of the main things to know about sugar water is that if you are not maintaining it, it's going to create a mold and bacteria within the feeder. And hummingbird tongues, this is one of their, you know, more like wow facts, are typically twice as long as their beak. And the only other bird that has that is a woodpecker. And so it's called a hyoid apparatus. And it goes into their mouth and the muscle actually splits in half and wraps around the back of their ears and attaches near their forehead. So when a hummingbird is licking, it can lick 13 times a second. And so that long tongue is going in and out at an incredibly fast rate. But that also means that they can get bacteria and mold attached to their tongue, which means their tongue swells, which means they cannot pull their tongue back into their body. And so people will post pictures of, you know, this odd thing sticking out of the hummingbird's beak, and that's what it is. And that is not going to happen because they're going to flowers and bushes and things like that. That's going to be from us. That's our fault. So honestly, if you do not have the ability to change your feeder every 4 to 5 days, if it's too much for your time, you're going on a vacation, then please don't put them out. Just don't put feeders out. The best thing for you to do is just plant appropriate flowers. A lot of them are long and skinny, but that's not the only flowers they want to go to, because often they're going to flowers just because of the insects that that flower attracts. So a lot of nursery centers understand proper hummingbird flowers, but actually it's better for you to kind of go in, you know, with some things that you've researched and ask for particular flowers, because, you know, they don't always have the right information. So that's the big thing. If you don't have time and the ability to clean your feeder appropriately, you only buy feeders that are easy to clean. That's the way to be providing for them. And if you're going to put it out, especially in the wintertime, you have to make sure that you do keep it going during the winter, because they can, when we get our freezes, they need that sugar water. The other thing is, there's been this whole thing where hummingbirds need to have, you know, some red in their food, which of course they don't have red in their flowers that they're drinking out of. So you just want a 4-to-1 mixture using the same sugar that you use to make cookies, the granulated sugar. You don't want to use organic. It actually has too much iron and it will hurt their livers. So it's just plain old cheap sugar is the way to do it.
And not no red dye.
No, because, you know, I worked with hummingbird banders, and as we were, you know, working in a suburban area, these birds immediately go to the bathroom after they eat, whether it be insects or sugar, and because of their metabolism. And when they would go to the bathroom, it was pink and red. So it's the same for us. You know, if you're not going to be willing to drink twice your body weight in blue Gatorade, then, you know, don't make the birds drink twice their body weight in red food coloring. You know, they don't need it, so don't do it. And don't buy the food coloring, don't buy the hummingbird food, no matter how well it's advertised at the whatever center it is. You always make it yourself.
So my mind is completely blown. Wait, I need to take a break. We have to reintroduce you. I feel like I could talk to you for 5 hours about hummingbirds. So if you're just joining us for today's In Season, obviously we're talking about hummingbirds. And we're talking about hummingbirds with Brenda Holmes.
Stanchu.
Okay, thank you.
You are welcome.
I'm like so blown away by all the facts. Your name totally went out of my head. Brenda Holmes Stanchu, she's a local master gardener and a naturalist and an educator, clearly.
Yeah, crazy about hummingbirds.
And we're like, the facts are coming hard and fast. And I am excited about this. This is so great. I want to jump in and say, so you mentioned, okay, like hummingbird feeders, you know, pros and cons. Again, if you can't clean them, don't have them up. But so if you're just going to plant a hummingbird garden, like what are some of the good plants, the good flowers to have? What would be like, you know, some top
plants? I personally love pineapple sage. It can be a really tricky one. You know, as someone who's new to here, the hummingbirds
are going. It's a tricky one here.
Yeah, it's been, I put it in the ground and it's going crazy in the spot that I have it, and the hummingbirds have been loving it. So what you want are tubular flowers. The bright pinks and reds and oranges, the fuchsia flowers, you know, they love those. They have evolved looking for those colors. And so they are constantly scanning and looking for that. So when people first put up feeders, if they're going to maintain them, I ask that they first decorate their feeder with like red yarn and things like that. So as the hummingbirds are traveling, they're like, they hit the brakes and then they're able to, you know, back up and go, okay, this is the potentiality of food. So that's another thing that hummingbirds sometimes get themselves into trouble with, because they are attracted so much, especially to red, that they often will go, you know, go into places or go up to things that are that similar color, which, you know, often can have them go into, for instance, someone's house or someone's garage because they're checking out a potential food source, or it's two males that are fighting each other and they're not paying attention which direction they're going, or they're trying to show off to a girl and they're not, you know, totally aware of their surroundings. So, you know, I know in Colorado we have a lot of electric fences, and one of the problems we had were that the stoppers on the electric fences were red. So, you know, these things that lend to surprise challenges.
Yeah. I have to say, I have been buzzed so many times by hummingbirds when I'm outside on my farm wearing a red shirt.
Exactly.
And it's fascinating to me to be like, oh, wait, they thought I was a flower, but I'm not.
Zoom by you, and people will go to, especially events, you know, the closer to the equator you are, the more varieties of hummingbirds, the more species you can see. and then you will have these big festivals and people will on purpose wear red earrings and bright red lipstick and
to attract the hummingbirds.
To attract the hummingbirds closer to them.
And it is a heartbreak too when they get inside the house or they get on. We have a porch that oftentimes hummingbirds will somehow get trapped on. And I will say my husband Packy has been very good at showing me how to like just capture a hummingbird with your hands.
They are tougher than you would think.
They really are. And that is an amazing feeling holding a hummingbird in your cupped
hands.
Their wing
beat, their heartbeat is, you know, I've worked with banders. I've held them many times for very good reasons and some, you know, not for great ones because they were stuck in people's things and we helped them. But, you know, a hummingbird's metabolism is so incredibly fast that they will literally be like a battery that loses its charge. And they will eventually fall, you know, and or get stuck in a location. And so, you know, you just kind of fold them up so their wings are back on their bodies and then take them outside. Mm-hmm. People will then the best thing is for you to feed them before you let them go. So if you have a feeder ready, just literally stick their beak right into that port. And if they don't wake up immediately, you can rub their forehead. That actually gets their tongue moving. But you need to do that all outside because we've coached people on this and they're so excited and so nervous. They're doing it in the middle of their living room and then the bird wakes up and then they have the same problem all over again. The bird's in the house.
So get it outside as fast as possible.
Get it outside so that when it flies. But feeding them right before is great because especially if it's a female taking care of a nest, you know, she really might have gotten worn out. So, an interesting thing about these, you know, birds is the guys are all about showing off and the girls are the ones that do everything else. They make
it's
that
not
nest
familiar at
all alone. They feed those babies all alone and the guy is just off looking for more girls.
How do they feed? What do they feed the babies with?
So they are really looking for a lot of insects mixed in with that nectar.
Okay.
So she is going to go off and be gathering all of that food within her own crop and then she's going to regurgitate it into those babies and they hatch out of an egg that is slightly bigger than a Tic Tac and so just try to imagine what that nestling looks like and then they are so tiny.
I have come across hummingbird nests and they are so tiny.
They are incredibly small. They grow at a rapid rate. They're going to look like females when they're ready to fledge. But she is going to make that nest as camouflaged as she can. And it's just like a perfect little sleeping bag. It's going to stretch as they grow, made of soft materials and hooked to the nest onto the branch by spider web.
What?
Yeah.
So where do they like to nest? So they're looking. That's probably why you don't see them.
It's a very wide variety of areas where they nest. Sometimes it's high, low, sometimes over water. It really depends on, you know, that particular female, but it's typically in an area that it's, you know, not exposed, but these nests are incredibly camouflaged and she will very often rebuild on top of an old nest or next to an old nest because she's had success.
Do they need water to drink or to bait? Is having water in your garden a good
like
thing?
Yeah, like so many birds, they have to maintain their feathers. And so they really like soft rainstorms. So they
will
be
out
fluttering back and forth.
If you're watering,
exactly.
Yeah.
And so misters work really well if you want to attract them into your yard. Different fountains, the way the water goes down. They don't like bird baths. Their feet are way too small. So their feet are only for perching. So they will use their wings to do everything else, even to move an inch on a branch. They use their wings. So they don't want to sit in a bird bath, but they love a mist of water. So they constantly have to maintain their feathers in order to keep that flight that they are, you know, they can fly backwards. They can fly upside down. And, you know, as soon as you say that to someone, I'm like, okay,
they don't fly upside down
all the way to Mexico. Okay. So they're doing these maneuvers constantly. So the way that their wings have evolved, they can, you know, do somersaults. But the main thing that they can do that is amazing is the hovering that they do. So when we see it, of course, they're moving their wings at an incredibly fast rate, but actually they're moving their the bones and the muscles of their arms in a figure eight. So they are doing this up and down motion with their wings, and they are the only birds that can do that. And 1/3 of their body weight is the muscles for their wings.
I am just so blown away by all of these. This is so...
I know.
This is
that's
incredible.
Why they're so easy to talk about.
It's
they're,
so
you know,
incredible.
Amazing.
We're starting to run out of time. We're not quite out of time yet, but I do want to direct people to this fantastic article that you wrote for Oregon State University, which I find kind of hilarious because the reason you wrote it is you went to the website.
Yeah, I was doing research. You know, when I first moved out here, I knew I wanted to continue being able to, you know, share about these birds, but I had to find out about the Anas. We do not have the Anas in Colorado. And, you know, so on the plains, you might see broadtails here and you might see calliope. So there are some other birds that kind of cross into the state, but, you know, with the Anas and the Rufus being the most. But I needed to do research. And as I came across a very formal, you know, link to OSU, and it was, you know, 9 facts about hummingbirds that are cool. And as I was reading it, I was like, oh, there was misleading information on there. Just some word choice, you know, talking about how hummingbirds suck. They don't suck anything. Hummingbirds, they are licking at a very fast rate. So just tiny word choices like that make a world of difference. Trying to help people to understand, you know, physically how these birds do everything that they do. So I had reached out to them saying, hey, you know, there's a few corrections. And after we went back and forth, they're like, you know what, how about we start all over and you do some work for us. And so, yeah, so I wrote a very detailed, so you can look that up on their website.
So Oregon State University, if people just Googled Oregon State University,
Hummingbirds. Oregon State University fact page, it should come up. It's several pages now, thanks to, you know, my, you know, inability to be brief. And
so there's a lot more people could find out there
exactly.
If they want more information, which I want more information now. I think I can't imagine anybody listening to this is not going to want to dive deeper into hummingbirds.
Because why wouldn't you want to know more about these cool birds or any other bird for that matter?
They really are amazing. I just feel so mind blown, and the tongues wrapping up into their heads.
Yeah, you can see the diagrams.
I mean, how did they even evolve? This is so fascinating. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're even more magical to me now.
Yeah, and there's over, 320 species of hummingbirds, and based on the flowers that they have evolved with, that often has determined the length and shape of their beaks. And then you have how the males attract the females. That's a whole different, you know, way that they have kind of their bodies have changed. But they have recent research that is showing that the hummingbird's length of their bill for many of them is changing based on the ability to find these different flower choices. And of course, that comes from, you know, which animals survive each year.
Yeah. It's so fascinating. These really are amazing, amazing birds. And I just encourage everybody to, like, get out there, plant flowers, go to the garden center, like, figure out what they are going to want to drink from. If you take anything away from this, if you have a hummingbird feeder. And also you're giving a talk at the Seaside Library.
Seaside Library on April 23rd, which is a Thursday. I believe it's 5:30. You can check that. And the other thing I like to add to people is, you know, two ways that these birds really suffer is cats, and the other one is windows. And so easy to get reflector stickers, super easy. You won't notice them after you have them up for a week. And boy, do they help all birds.
I know. And watch out for your cats.
Yeah.
Brenda, thank you so much. This has been fascinating.
You're welcome.
I definitely want to learn more about hummingbirds now.
Absolutely.
Thank you.